You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 2nd of November. Some really interesting numbers about the Utah Jazz players. One issue that's probably worth putting an eye on, a look around the league, and then a points gained way too early, only because Steph is so great. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. I hope you are just fabulous today. It is so great to talk to you on this Friday. I love it. I'm looking outside. There's gray clouds. It kind of looks stormy. It's November. Saw an interesting little note from Sterling Paulson on Channel 2 last night that this month we drop temperature more than any other month. I kind of love it. Love this time of year. It's kind of gloomy out. Kind of there. Maybe. the sky is sad because Donovan's not playing tonight. All right, here's what we got today. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, and a lot of geeky numbers. We're going to go deep on a bunch of stuff here today on the program. I did a ton of work last night, and so I want to share it with you. You can get this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. You can also ask your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Jazz. Hope you heard the Sam Amick conversation on Locked On NBA. I really loved that. Thought it was a good one. So hope you enjoy it and already listened to it. All right, here's the plan. We're going to quickly preview Memphis. We're going to look at a number on how Donovan's improved. We're going to look at some interesting things on Joe Ingles' world and how different it is. We're going to look at Jay Crowder, Ricky Rubio. I think that's all I found interesting things on our players. Then a little issue of possible concern and how actually the same thing is happening somewhere else, and we'll look at that. And then I have run the spreadsheet but not looked at the numbers yet on points gained. And points gained is our offensive metric system we use because I think Steph Curry is like blowing the world up, and I want to see if that's true. All right, so Memphis comes in, by the way, and the big difference between Memphis this year and last year is defense. So they were terrible last year, but offensively they're not that much better. They're 23rd overall. They're 26th in the half court. They're 23rd in shooting. They're 27th in offensive rebounding. They go to the line, but they did that last year. What's totally different about them this year is that they're rebounding, which they didn't do last year. They're defending the shot, which they didn't do last year. They're getting a bunch of turnovers. They're number one in the league in turnovers. Rubio's got to have a good game. And they're not fouling. So what's really interesting is, and I'm going to talk to JB Bickerstaff about this, and this just might be having Marc Gasol around more, but they last year were 30th in the league in fouling. This year they're 14th, and simultaneously their turnovers have gone way up, forcing turnovers. So they're just defensively elite. They play slow, 29th in the league, and Conley and Gasol are leading them. They're 4-2 on the year, and if they get this one, they suddenly beat us twice at home. That's a big deal for them, and we don't have Donovan tonight, so it's going to be quite a task for someone. The Jazz, by the way, some interesting notes on the Jazz. Our effective field goal percentage last year was 9th at 7th. I mean, these are like the exact same. Turnovers, 24th, 23rd. Rebounding, offensive rebounding, 17th, now 13th. And free throw percentage, 8th, now 2nd. Now, it has those little tiny incremental improvements where a little bit better in all of them have jumped us from 16th offensively to 11th. And we're 9th defensively. Really good piece on cleaning the glass that your differential early in the season is better than your indicator of your record. And I believe the Jazz differential is about 10th in the NBA right now. We probably think it should be a little bit better. But the defense just has not been quite as sharp yet. And the defense ranking is 9th in the NBA, and last year was 2nd. All right, let's play around with a few little fun number notes. Today's show is brought to you by The Store as well as Murdoch Hyundai. So Donovan Mitchell is doing some things really, really, really well. And I thought, you know, he's not going to play tonight, but just signs of development, signs of growth. One of the number one thing I talked about all the time was the off-the-bounce three, that he had to add that. So far this year, he is 11 of 26 on off-the-bounce threes, 42%. which was 29%. So that's pretty big. His assist rate is way up. He last year assisted 18%. This year he's assisting 21% when he's on the floor. Okay? His usage is about the exact same. His shooting in different areas. At the rim, he's gone from 62% to 70%. He's now in the 87th percentile of all combo guards shooting at the rim. His above-the-break three is a 40% shot. He's in the 72nd. He's not hitting his corner three like he did last year. He is not drawing more fouls. Interesting. Last year, the percentage of shots that which he was fouled was 8.7%, and this year it's 6.2. That's the only area where he's not as solid, and he's not rebounding quite the same as he did a year ago. But the little thing, so we talked about and areas of improvement for him were, one, the off-the-break bounce three, certainly has done that. Two was a little bit more assisting, seeing his teammates more, doing that. And then the other was drawing fouls, and that hasn't quite happened yet. But that's pretty exciting to see those things taking place right there. Jay Crowder. I thought this was interesting. Jay Crowder on wide open threes is 11 of 22. That's incredible. 11 of 22 on wide open threes. 3 of 18 if a defender is within 6 feet. That's not as incredible. So that I thought was interesting. Last year when a defender was within 4 feet, he was 4 of 23 in Utah. So he takes a lot of contested threes because he's willing to shoot them, which is fine. He just doesn't make those. And I almost bet that's something that he and his coaches can find in just a video thing. I'll bet he's got a little something he's doing when guys get close to him or something of that sort. His usage is way down right now. Last year, his usage with the Jazz was at 19.5%. Usage is percentage of possessions you use when you're on the when the player's on the floor. And this year, it's at 14.1. So that's interesting. Great shot distribution, though. Great shot distribution. He's only taking 15% of his shots as mid-range shots. Takes 59% of his shots as threes, and then 25% of his shots at the rim, which is not great. And he's not, that could just be higher. It was. At other points of his career, that was 33-35%, but the offenses are different. He's finishing at 65%, which is average. His foul drawing is down. I'm wondering if everyone's foul drawing is down. That was a complaint of Luke Walton, is that guys weren't getting fouled on their way to the basket. Okay, fun note on Joe Ingles. Last year, and actually I was tipped off to this first by Scott Rogers of the Jazz TV crew, so I want to give him credit, and then I ran the numbers again last night. Last year, 43% of Joe Ingles' three-point shots were wide open, and he hit 48% of them. This year he's hitting the exact same percent of wide-open threes, 48%. But instead of 43% being wide open, only 28% are wide open. So now, either Joe is trying to be more aggressive and just shoot more, and he's just taking that look faster, which we've all asked him to do, or two, teams are sticking to him. That's something the coaches have got to figure out. They got to look at it. The one that's interesting, if he was not wide open last year, he hit 40% of his shots. If he's not wide open this year, he's hitting 30%. So, I don't know. Again, just kind of an interesting little... His catch-and-shoot numbers are down 10 percentage points from a year ago. It's early in the season. He gets hot for a week, and it goes back up. But he was at 40%, 46% on catch-and-shoot threes, and right now he's at 36%. But wide open, he's at nearly 50%, which is incredible. He's just not getting those looks. Rubio is interesting, and then an interesting note for you that's one we brought to keep an eye on. Rubio is really good on his wide open threes. Rubio on wide open threes is 7 of 19. Otherwise, he's 1 of 5. It's exactly the number he was last year, 37%. Rubio's shooting better in practice than he has at any point in his career. And so I've got to figure it's going to parlay at some point. Something to keep an eye on about the Jazz. We won't have any data on it for tonight, maybe not even for tomorrow night if Donovan doesn't play, but something to keep an eye on, and I don't know what you do about it. We'll have that for you next. Today's show brought to you in part by The Store at 6200 South and 20th East. So many fun things going on there. First of all, Friday is June Pie Day, which means June brings down her all of her non-sweet pies like the pork tomatillo and the quiches and all the other stuff. So make sure you get there today and get that in. Number two, Mudslide cookies, of course, but all sorts of other great things. The meat section that they have there, I don't know if I've talked about this enough, but they're, and I don't want to like give you the numbers analysis on meat and bore you to death with all the analytics on it. But so there's two different types of kind of really high level meat. And Jeff and Scott of The Store and Amy went and tested all of them. And Hereford beef was 15-0 in their taste test. And so they have become the exclusive Hereford beef dealer in the area. Local farms all around Utah. They're all, it's all about local. I mean, they do the local from the cheese section to the cotton candy to the tortilla chips. It's all about local. So they check out their meats in the Hereford beef section. They did a taste test. It was 15-0 that they thought that tasted better. So, and plus Chef Paul has created great new sandwiches. The turkey and brie is great. All in the back. It's all at The Store, 6200 South, 20th East. Try out the Mudslide cookie. Feel free to send me a picture. We're going to drive the Mudslide cookie to being number one. 6200 South and 20th East. All right. It is too early to really dig into this number. But it's probably worth pointing out right now because if it gets skewed, like it's so skewed right now that we probably need to kind of keep an eye on it in regards to that this is going to have these numbers right now, what's happened in the first 8 games will last for 20 games. And so we probably should keep an eye on whether it's improving. Last year when the Jazz opened the year, their starting lineup struggled. And then they kind of got through it. And then when Jay Crowder came, the Jazz lineup was unbelievable. So, and they got through it. So last year, the Jazz starting lineup, the same one they're running right now, for the 17-18 season, let me get that for you. It was of Favors, with Favors and Gobert before, struggled early in the year. And then by the end of the year, was pretty good. Its plus-minus was in the 76, using cleaning the glass, was in the 76th percentile. The offensive rating was average at 108.9. It was in the 49th percentile. And the defense was brilliant at 96.9. Absolutely brilliant. And so that by the end, that lineup, according to cleaning the glass, was plus 12. Jay Crowder's lineup in 383 minutes, just not a big enough sample size to really know what to do about it. When you put Jay Crowder in for Derek Favors, was plus 35. Was in the 98th percentile in all lineups, 94th percentile offensively, 96th percentile defensively. I mean, as good as any lineup could be. Had an unnatural foul rate. Okay? It was in the 95th percentile in drawing fouls. No other lineup was there. Small sample size. And so I think in the offseason, it was a pretty reasonable thing to look at that and say, I'm not sure we can really count on that. Now, the defensive numbers, there wasn't anything that was truly unusual in the defensive numbers, though the effective field goal percentage was so low that you looked at that and said, okay, if our team average is 51% effective field goal percentage, and the defense had a 43% with Crowder on, that seems unnatural also. So you look, any reasonable person looked at these numbers in the offseason of the Jazz starting lineup compared and said, all right, well, the starters were plus 12 and Crowder was plus 35, and that's crazy, and that seems unrealistic to maintain. And it just didn't have a big enough sample size with 383 minutes. Okay, We don't have a big enough sample size yet, but we now have both of them having played about the same amount of minutes, and the discrepancy is even more extreme. The starting lineup right now is really struggling, and we won't know anything more about it, and then we can really skew the numbers without Donovan and saying, oh, look, Favors and Gobert can't score together, particularly when we take the next two. You know, I don't know how many games Donovan's out, but I'm assuming if he doesn't play tonight, he's not playing Saturday. I have no knowledge. I know the same thing you do. I read the same release, but like logic, right? If he's not playing tonight, why getting on a plane is going to make him better the next day seems pretty unlikely. So our offense with the current starting lineup is now in the sixth percentile. That's not good, by the way, 0 to 100. Offensively at a 96.7. And is turning the ball over at an outrageous rate. It's in the third percentile of taking care of the ball. Shooting it not very well. Offensive rebounding it well, but and not getting the foul line. And is minus seven so far this season. And the defense is only average at 103.4. And there's some weird numbers about how often people are having transition against them. And some weird things like that that are too early to really make a deal about. But what's interesting is on the half-court defense, where you would think that the Jazz, according to Clean the Glass, are at the best with this. The half-court defense is not great. It's in the 10th percentile in points per play with our starting lineup right now. So that's really weird of why that is. They have done a good – there's a lot of transition against them, but that – so that's like 20% of all possessions, and then actually they've defended the transition great. But in the half court, our stifling Gobert, Favors, Ingles, Mitchell, Rubio defense is in the 10th percentile. So that lineup's struggling. Okay, no big deal. It's early. It's shown track record over 2 years. But the Crowder lineup is not struggling. And again, it's as we talked about in the offseason, it doesn't play starters. So it's a little hard to figure out. There's problems and noise in all this numbers, and that's a little there's a little trepidation here. But the offense is in the 96th percentile again. And the foul rate is in the 96th percentile again. And the turnover rate is in the 93rd percentile for not taking it over, turning it over again. And I don't know when they suddenly say, all right, I have a large enough sample size. This really tells something. But the Jay Crowder lineup with our starting lineup, which has played 153 minutes, actually more than our starters, is plus 26. The defensive numbers are okay, but much better than our starters again. Interestingly, what the statistical anomaly right now is the rate by which that lineup is fouling, which is probably because they're coming in and playing the second half of the first and third quarters in which they're already in the bonus with the new rules, and so their defense is actually way better than it looks statistically because they are in the last percentile of any lineup in foul rate. They're allowing free throw rate at 23%. But if the starting lineup starts the first and third quarters and is not in the bonus and commits a bunch of fouls, it looks really good, which actually should make that defense even better. And it should make the Crowder defensive lineup less good, and the Crowder defensive lineup is better. So this is a little interesting to me. I don't know when the sample size is enough. I don't know when you weigh... I don't know what the hell you do if you actually believe the sample size is enough. Let me clarify that. And I don't know when you weigh starters versus non-starters, but I just made a pretty good argument of why it's actually a disadvantage to play the second half of the first quarter rather than the first half. And moreover, Quinn has started to play Royce O'Neal and Jay Crowder together, pulling Joe Ingles because he wants to get Joe Ingles into that second unit with Dante Exum, Alec Burks, or Grayson Allen and play with Derek Favors. And that second that lineup's working. The Dante, Alec, Joe Ingles, Jay Crowder, Derek Favors is plus 28. The Royce O'Neal in for Joe Ingles lineup is not working at all. It's minus 22.7, but only 58 minutes. I don't know what the answer is there unless it becomes Dante instead of Royce O'Neal and let Dante play the three. But we all know I like Dante playing the three. Dante doesn't want to play three. I just want Dante to play three. So I don't know what the answer is there. I don't know when the sample size is large enough that you make any decisions. 58 minutes is certainly not enough. 153 minutes is certainly not enough. 120 minutes is certainly not enough. Two seasons worth begins to get interesting, and I don't know the answer there. So it's just worth jumping out there. But it's not great when your starting lineup is in the 6th percentile of the league offensively and your first bench unit is in the 96th. For the 96th part. This is, I don't doubt the starting lineup will get it figured out. Donovan's got to come back and some things like that. But I do wonder whether the Jay Crowder lineup for some reason is just awesome. And Jay Crowder's only okay. Like, he hasn't been, like, superhuman in any way, shape, or form. So I think that's really interesting also. All right. That one's just one to chew on. And I also think it's the only other reason I bring it up that I think it's important is that the numbers are really skewed right now. And so they're going to be skewed that way for 20-25 games. If I wanted to just make a point and pound that for the next 30 days, I could do it because those numbers are so skewed. So we kind of have to watch when Donovan comes back how that lineup progresses if we want to. Today's show is brought to you in part by Murdoch Hyundai. Oh, by the way, points gained is coming up next. I'm so excited. Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. The great lineup of Hyundai cars. So impressed by what Hyundai's able to build. You get more bells, more whistles, more fun aspects to your car, more performance for less money. I'm serious. If you're buying a car right now, just do, and you're not planning to look at a Hyundai, take the little bit of time. And if you're looking at a sedan, go compare the Sonata to whatever you're looking at. If you're buying a mid-sized SUV, compare the Tucson. If you're buying a full-size SUV, compare the Santa Fe. If you're looking for a little mini fun SUV, compare the Kona. If you're doing the Prius, compare the Ioniq to it. Make sure you take a second and compare because I think you'll be stunned at what you can get for the price value. Then I suggest you go to Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street because Murdoch will give you the no regrets experience, which includes car washes for life, safety inspection for life, also the 5-day price match guarantee and the return policy that is exclusive to them. Hyundai gives you the 100,000-mile assurance as well. That's taking place for you, courtesy of Hyundai, and you can stop by. We bought our car from Murdoch Hyundai, Santa Fe. We had a great buyer experience. We've had a super experience the whole time with them, from the oil changes to everything else, and I think you will too as well. 4646 South State Street, also in Logan and in Linden. Are we ready for a little points gained? All right, for those that are new to the program, what the heck is points gained? Points gained is a proprietary stat that we have built here on that I've built. And the idea is that if I take the average player in the NBA and he were to take 15 scoring opportunities in a night, I can figure out what the average a group of average players would do with the scoring opportunity with those scoring opportunities. And if he does the exact same, then his points gained on a given night is zero. Okay? If he's better, then he gets a certain amount of points gained. Traditionally, over the years, we've had about 10 guys that have a 2.0 or better in points gained. I don't know if I described that very well. So here's an example. LeBron James last year used 22 scoring opportunities. He was 2.8 points better than if the average players, if an average player used 22 or if a collection of average players used 22 scoring opportunities, LeBron was a 2.8. Fifth best in the NBA. Curry last year was 4.7. Durant was 3.5. Harden was 3.0. And Karl-Anthony Towns was 3.0. Usually that's what we have. We have three guys above three. And we usually have 10 guys above two. So LeBron was 2.8. Anthony Davis was 2.5. Kyrie Irving was 2.1. Rudy Gobert was 2.1. And Clint Capella was 2.0. That's right on about the traditional numbers. And it really what it, my biggest takeaway from this points gained is how negatively impactful negative players are to you. Negative players really destroy your offense. Okay, early in the season, we have, you know, right now I think it looks like we have about 25 guys that are 2.0 or better. Steph Curry is the reason we're running this today. He is a 7.9 points gained right now. He's going to have the greatest offensive season in the history of the NBA. I mean, like, he'd actually have to, like, miss every shot for a while to not have. His 15-16 season was a 5.8 points gained. It is one of the single greatest seasons of all time, arguably the best of all time. That year, Steph Curry was a 5.8. Kevin Durant was in Oklahoma at a 4.1. And James Harden was next at a 2.8. Make sure you understand the impact of this. So James Harden was the third most impactful player in the game. And he was 2.8 points gained. Steph Curry was two times that in the 15-16 season. to the third most impactful player. I could have added up like 10 guys and not gotten the impact that Steph Curry gets. This year, Steph Curry's blowing that out of the water. He's a 7.9. Steph Curry is the greatest offensive player in the history of the NBA, and Steph Curry is by far the best offensive player today, and Steph Curry is dominating this game at a level that no one quite understands yet. The scary thing is his teammate, Kevin Durant, is one of the two other best offensive players in the game currently, but he's nowhere near the offensive player that Steph Curry is. So here is your top 10 points gained right now. Steph Curry's a 7.9. Rudy Gobert is the second most positively impactful offensive player in the NBA right now at a 4.8. Wow. That's what happens when you shoot 75%. Dame Lillard is third. Portland is really good, and Dame Lillard is having an MVP first half of the season. Kevin Durant is fourth. Devin Booker's only played four games, but he's fifth. Domantas Sabonis, taking advantage of the player movement rules, the big guys are becoming player movement guys, is sixth. Bielitsa is seventh. I was going to talk about it, ran out of time. Sacramento with Bielitsa on the floor is way better. Everybody on the floor, Yogi Ferrell shooting 45 percentage points better, Fox 17, Buddy Hield 17, Justin Jackson 13% better, Willie Cauley-Stein 13% better, Iman Shumpert 8% better. It's a nice point piece in Nylon Calculus about the Bielitsas giving the Kings a different look. It's similar to what Jay Crowder does for the Jazz. Pretty interesting. So let me review that. Steph 1, Gobert 2, Lillard 3, Durant 4. By the way, for those of you that are listening to this that don't usually know, like, well, Gobert can't be that valuable. Let me give you a thought. The thought is, if every other name makes sense and one doesn't, then you need to reevaluate what you think of the one. Steph 1, Rudy 2, Dame 3, Kevin Durant 4, Sabonis 5, Bielitsa 6, DeAndre Jordan 7, value of the big man rolling to the basket, Zach LaVine 8, Chris Middleton 9, Nikola Jokic 10, just to keep with the top 20 because they're all above 2, Kyle Lowry 11, Jimmy Butler 12, Zach Collins has been brilliant in Portland 13, Dwight Powell, 14. Buddy Hield, 15. Reason why they're playing so well. He's going to be really good. Saw that coming. I think I had it on my list of things this season. Joe Harris, 16. Boban, 17. Kemba Walker, 18. Nikolai Vukovic, that's a big change, 19. Kawhi Leonard, 20. Other guys having a good year. Marcus Morris, James Harden, Bogdanović in Indiana. Danilo Gallinari, that's why the Clippers are good. Montrezl Harrell, why the Clippers are good. Mention that as well. These numbers tell you some things. DeAndre Ayton, 2.2 as a rookie. JaVale McGee and Blake Griffin are all the guys over 2. LeBron, for interest, is at 1.8. Scanning down other names that might jump out. Let's go take a look at the worst offensive players in the NBA so far this year that are killing their teams. Eric Gordon of the Rockets is a minus 5.5. That might be a large. Jonathan Simmons in Orlando, minus 3.8. J.J. Barea, minus 3.7. Harrison Barnes, minus 3.7. Dennis Schroeder, minus 3.3. Kevin Love hasn't played much. Hollis Jefferson is minus 3.1. Evan Fournier in Orlando has been brutal, minus 3.0. Mario Hezonja getting a lot of time in New York, not doing well, minus 2.8. Josh Jackson in Phoenix, minus 2.8. Dario Saric in Philadelphia has been disappointing, minus 2.7. Reggie Bullock, who was a great shooter last year, not so much this year, minus 2.6. Jaylen Brown, minus 2.6, didn't play last night. Boston had a great offensive game. Thought. Avery Bradley, minus 2.6. Lakers take him out of the lineup. They will be way better. Paul George, minus 2.5, had a brutal night last night. Trey Lyles in Denver, minus 2.5. Markelle Fultz, minus 2.5. Alan Crabb in Brooklyn, minus 2.4. Patrick Beverley, minus 2.4. Clippers figure out what to do about Beverley and the fact that Patrick Beverley and whoever I just mentioned a moment ago, his name is totally Avery Bradley, are both killing them in the backcourt and go to Lou Williams and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They are going to get way better. LaMarcus Aldridge, minus 2.2. And of our under two guys, Harry Giles minus 2.2. Ricky Rubio minus 2.1. Quickly, let's do the Utah Jazz. That Ricky minus 2.1 is a killer. Let's take a look at the Jazz. So Gobert's 4.8. George Niang's 1.7. Grayson Allen's 0.9. Joe Ingles is a 0.9. Jay Crowder's a 0.6 positive. Alec Burks is positive. Royce O'Neal's even. Derek Favors is negative. Ooh, as a big guy. 49% shooting. Epe is negative minus. Derek's really average, but minus 0.2. You'd hope Derek was up at his 2.2 like he was last year. I think Derek last year was really quite positive. So we've got to find a way to refine that. Eric was 0.8 positive last year. So that's a one. That's a big difference. 1 point is a big difference. Dante minus 0.6. Donovan Mitchell minus 0.8. Only going to the free throw line 7% of the time. Makes it very hard for Donovan to be efficient. Ricky Rubio minus 2.1. So that's an average offense right there. Thank goodness for Rudy. Rudy is driving this offense right now at a positive 4.8. All right, that was our first points gained. It's way too early, but it's interesting as Steph Curry has got. Just out of this world. So that's why I wanted to run it. And I hope the rest of the league. Can we just, like, really, honestly, we've got to stop discussing. Last year, he was the MVP too. But then he got injured, and then Durant was the MVP, and then we got bored of that, so we went elsewhere. So we went to Harden. So can we, like, just stop? Or maybe it was 2 years ago Durant was the MVP. Stop with all of our other conversations and just kind of realize Steph is the MVP until he determines he's not. That is Locked On Jazz. Go grab Locked On NBA. Sam Amick conversation was great, and then Anthony and Adam are always a lot of fun on Fridays as well. Postcast after the game, Empty the Noggin, Jazz Game Rewind, all at utahjazz.com/LockedOnJazz. Excited to have that for you and coming your direction both after the game on Friday and Saturday. Have a great one. Talk to you soon. Remember, you can listen to Utah Jazz Basketball on your Alexa if you're an Audio League Pass subscriber. Just tell it to activate the NBA skill and then tell it to play Utah Jazz Basketball. Have a great day.